Chapter 9. On reaching home, Lizaveta Prokofievna stopped in the first room. She could get no further, and sank on the couch, perfectly limp, forgetting even to ask Mushkin to sit down. It was a rather large room, with a round table in the middle of it, with an open fireplace, with quantities of flowers on an étagère in the window, and with another glass door leading into the garden in the opposite wall. Adelaida and Alexandra came in at once, and looked inquiringly and with perplexity at their mother and Mushkin. At their summer villa, the girls usually got up about 9 o'clock, but for the last 3 days Aglaya had been getting up earlier and going for a walk in the garden, not at 7 o'clock, but at 8, or even later. Lizaveta Prokofievna, who really had been kept awake all night by her various worries, got up about 8 o'clock on purpose to meet Aglaya in the garden, reckoning on her being up already. But she did not find her, either in the garden or in her bedroom. At last she grew thoroughly alarmed and waked her daughters. From the servants she learnt that Aglaya Ivanovna had gone out into the park at 7 o'clock. The girls laughed at their whimsical sister's new whim, and observed to their mother that Aglaya might very likely be angry if she went to look for her in the park, and that she was probably with a book sitting on the green seat, of which she had been talking the day before yesterday, and about which she had almost quarrelled with Prince S., because he saw nothing particularly picturesque about it. Coming upon the couple, and hearing her daughter's strange words, Lizaveta Prokofievna was greatly alarmed for many reasons, but when she brought Mushkin home with her, she felt uneasy at having spoken openly about it.
"After all, why should Aglaya not meet the prince in the park and talk to him, even if the interview had been arranged between them beforehand? Don't imagine, my good friend," she braced herself to say, "that I brought you here to cross-examine you. After what happened yesterday, I might well not have been anxious to see you for some time."
She could not go on for a moment. "But you would very much like to know how I came to meet Aglaya Ivanovna this morning." Mushkin completed her sentence with perfect serenity.
"Well, I did want to." Lizaveta Prokofievna flared up at once. "I'm not afraid of speaking plainly, for I'm not insulting anyone, and I don't want to offend anyone."
"To be sure, you naturally want to know, without any offence. You are her mother. I met Aglaya Ivanovna this morning at the green seat at 7 o'clock, as she invited me to do so yesterday. She let me know by a note yesterday evening that she wanted to meet me to talk of an important matter. We met, and had been talking for a whole hour, of matters that only concerned Aglaya Ivanovna. That's all."
"Of course it's all, my good sir, and without a shadow of doubt,"
Madame Epanchin assented with dignity.
"Capital, prince," said Aglaya, suddenly entering the room. "I thank you with all my heart for not believing that I would condescend to lie about it. Is that enough, maman, or do you intend to cross-examine him further?"
"You know that I have never yet had to blush for anything before you, though you would perhaps be glad if I had,"
Lizaveta Prokofievna replied impressively.
"Goodbye, prince. Forgive me for having troubled you, and I hope you will remain convinced of my unchanged respect for you."
Mushkin at once bowed to right and to left, and silently withdrew. Alexandra and Adelaida laughed and whispered together. Their mother looked sternly at them.
"Maman," laughed Adelaida, "it was only that the prince made such magnificent bows. Sometimes he's so clumsy, but he was suddenly just like, well, like Yevgeny Pavlovich."
"Delicacy and dignity are taught by the heart, and not by the dancing master,"
Lizaveta Prokofievna summed up sententiously, and she went up to her room without even looking at Aglaya. When Mushkin got home about 9 o'clock, he found Vera Lukyanovna and the servant on the veranda. They were sweeping up and clearing away after the disorder of the previous evening.
"Thank goodness we've had time to finish before you came," said Vera joyfully.
"Good morning. I feel a little giddy. I didn't sleep well. I should like a nap."
"Here, in the veranda, as you did yesterday. Good. I'll tell them all not to wake you. Father's gone off somewhere."
The maid went away. Vera was about to follow her, but she turned and went anxiously up to Mushkin.
"Prince, don't be hard on that poor fellow. Don't send him away today."
"I won't on any account. It's as he chooses."
"He won't do anything now, and don't be severe with him."
"Certainly not. Why should I?"
"And don't laugh at him. That's the chief thing."
"Oh, I shouldn't think of it."
"'I'm silly to speak of it to a man like you,' said Vera, flushing. "'Though you're tired,' she laughed, half turning to go away. "'Your eyes are so nice at this moment. They look happy.'
"'Do they really?' Mushkin asked eagerly, and he laughed, delighted. But Vera, who was as simple-hearted and blunt as a boy, was suddenly overcome with confusion. She turned redder and redder, and, still laughing, she went hurriedly away.
"'What a jolly girl,' thought Mushkin, and immediately forgot her.
He went to the corner of the veranda, where there stood a sofa with a little table beside it. He sat down, hid his face in his hands, and sat so for some 10 minutes. All at once, with haste and agitation, he took 3 letters out of his coat pocket. But again the door opened and Kolya came out. Mushkin was, as it were, relieved that he had to replace the letters in his pocket and put off the evil moment.
"'Well, what an adventure!' said Kolya, sitting down on the sofa and going straight for the subject, as boys like him always do. "'What do you think of Ippolit now? Have you no respect for him?'
"'Why not? But, Kolya, I'm tired. Besides, it's too sad to begin about that again. How is he, though?'
"'He's asleep, and won't wake for another 2 hours. I understand you haven't slept at home. You've been in the park. It was the excitement, of course, and no wonder.
How do you know that I've been walking in the park and haven't been asleep?
Vera said so just now. She tried to persuade me not to come, but I couldn't resist coming for a minute. I've been watching for the last 2 hours by his bedside. Now Kostya Lebediev is taking his turn. Badovsky is gone. Then lie down, Prince. Good night, or rather day. Only do you know, I'm amazed.
Of course, all this...
No, Prince, no, I'm amazed at his confession, especially the part in which he spoke of Providence and the future life. There's a gigantic thought in it.
Mushkin looked affectionately at Kolya, who had no doubt come in to talk at once about the gigantic thought.
But it was not only the thought, it was the whole setting of it. If it had been written by Voltaire, Rousseau, Proudhon, I shouldn't have been so much struck. But for a man who knows for certain that he has only 10 minutes to talk like that, isn't that pride? Why, it's the loftiest assertion of personal dignity. It's regular defiance. Yes, it's titanic strength of will. And after that, to declare he left the cap out on purpose. It's base, incredible. But you know, he deceived us yesterday. He was sly. I didn't pack his bag with him, and I never saw the pistol. He packed everything up himself, so he took me quite off my guard. Vera says that you're going to let him stay here. I swear there'll be no danger, especially as we shall never leave him.
And which of you have been with him in the night?
Kostya Lebediev, Badovsky and I. Keller was there a little while, but he went off to Lebediev's part to sleep, because there wasn't room for us all to lie down. Ferdushenko, too, slept in Lebediev's part of the house. He went off at 7. The general sleeps always at Lebediev's. He's gone, too. Lebediev will come out to you presently. He's been looking for you. I don't know why. He asked for you twice. Shall I let him in or not, as you want to sleep? I'm going to have a sleep, too. Oh, by the way, I should like to tell you one thing. I was surprised at the general this morning. I came out for a minute and suddenly met the general, and still so drunk that he didn't know me. He stood before me like a post. He fairly flew at me when he came to himself. "How's the invalid?" said he. "I came to ask after the invalid." I reported this and that. "Well, that's all right," he said. "But what I really came out for, what I got up for, was to warn you. I have reasons for supposing that one can't say everything before Mr. Ferdushenko, and one must be on one's guard." "Do you understand, Prince?"
"Really? But it doesn't matter to us."
"Of course it doesn't. We're not Masons. So I felt surprised at the General's getting up on purpose in the night to wake me to tell me so."
"Ferdushenko has gone, you say?"
"At 7 o'clock. He came in to see me on the way. I was sitting up with Ippolit. He said he was going to spend the day with Vilkin. There's a drunken fellow here called Vilkin. Well, I'm off. And here's Lukian Timofeyitch. The prince is sleepy, Lukian Timofeyitch. Right, about face." "Only for a moment, much honoured prince. On a matter of great consequence to me."
Lebediev, coming in, pronounced in a forced undertone of great significance, and he bowed with dignity. He had only just come in, and still held his hat in his hand. His face looked preoccupied and wore a peculiar, unusual expression of personal dignity. Mushkin asked him to sit down.
"'You've inquired for me twice already. "'You are still anxious, perhaps, on account of what happened yesterday.'
"'You mean on account of that boy, Prince? "'Oh, no. "'Yesterday my ideas were in confusion. "'But today I don't intend contra-carrying your propositions in anything whatever.'
"'Contra? What did you say?'
"'I said contra-carrying, a French word, "'like many other words that have entered into the composition of the Russian language, "'but I don't defend it.'
"'What's the matter with you this morning, Lebediev? "'You're so dignified and formal.' "'And you speak with such solemnity, and as if you were spelling it out,' said Mushkin, laughing.
"'Nikolai Ardialonovich,'
Lebediev addressed Kolya in a voice almost of emotion,
"'having to acquaint the prince with a matter affecting myself alone? "'Of course, of course. It's not my business. "'Goodbye, prince.'
Kolya retired at once.
"'I like the child for his tact,'
pronounced Lebediev, looking after him.
"'A quick boy, but inquisitive.' "'I've encountered a severe calamity, respected prince, last night, or this morning at daybreak. "'I hesitate to determine the precise hour.'
"'What is it?'
"'I have lost 400 rubles from my coat pocket, much honoured prince. "'We were keeping the day,'
added Lebediev with a sour smile. "'You've lost 400 rubles. That's a pity.
"'Particularly for a poor man honourably maintaining his family by his own labour.'
"'Of course, of course. How did it happen?'
"'The fruits of drinking. I've come to you as my providence, much honoured prince. I received a sum of 400 rubles in silver from a debtor yesterday at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and I came back here by train. I had my pocketbook in my pocket. When I changed my uniform for my indoor coat, I put the money in the coat pocket, intending that very evening to meet a call with it.' "'I was expecting an agent.
"'By the way, Lukian Timofeich, "'is it true you put an advertisement in the papers "'that you would lend money on gold or silver articles?'
"'Through an agent. "'My own name does not appear, nor my address. "'The sum at my disposal is paltry, "'and in view of the increase of my family, "'you will admit that a fair rate of interest—'
"'Quite so, quite so. "'I only ask for information. "'Forgive my interrupting.
Well, "'The agent did not turn up.' Meantime, the wretched boy was brought here. I was already in an over-elevated condition after dinner. The visitors came. We drank tea and I grew merry, to my ruin. When Keller came in late and announced your fete day and the order for champagne, since I have a heart, dear and much-honoured prince, which you have probably remarked already, seeing that I have deserved you should, since I have a heart, I will not say... "'feeling, but grateful, and I am proud of it. "'I thought, well, to do greater respect to the coming festivity "'and in expectation of congratulating you "'by going to change my old housecoat "'and putting on the uniform I had taken off on my return, "'which indeed I did, as you, Prince, probably observed, "'seeing me the whole evening in my uniform. "'Changing my attire, I forgot the pocketbook in the coat pocket.' "'So true it is that when God will chastise a man, "'he first of all deprives him of his reason. "'And only this morning, at 7:30 on waking up, "'I jumped up like a madman and snatched first thing at my coat. "'The pocket was empty. "'The pocketbook had vanished.
"'Oh, that is unpleasant.
"'Unpleasant indeed. "'And with true tact, you have at once found the right word for it,'
"'Lebediev added, not without slyness.'
"'Well, but,' Mushkin said uneasily, pondering. "'It's serious, you know.'
"'Serious indeed. "'Again, Prince, you have found the word to describe—'
"'Oh, don't go on, Lukian Timofeich. "'What is there to find? "'Words are not what matter. "'Do you think you could have dropped it out of your pocket when you were drunk?'
"'I might have. "'Anything may happen when one is drunk, "'as you so sincerely express it, much honoured Prince. "'But I beg you to consider—' "'If I had dropped the article out of my pocket when I changed my coat, "'the dropped article would have been on the floor. "'Where is that article?'
"'Did you put it away, perhaps, in a drawer, in a table?'
"'I've looked through everything. "'I've rummaged everywhere, though I hadn't hidden it anywhere "'and hadn't opened any drawer, as I distinctly remember.
"'Have you looked in your cupboard?'
"'The first thing I did was to look in the cupboard, "'and I've looked there several times already. "'Then how could I have put it in the cupboard, truly honoured prince?'
"'I must own, Lebediev, this distresses me.
Then someone must have found it on the floor.
Or picked it out of my pocket. Two alternatives.
This distresses me very much. For who?
Well, that's the question. No doubt of it. That is the great question. You find the very word, the very notion, with wonderful exactitude, and you define the position, most illustrious prince.
Oh, Lukian Timofeitch, give over scoffing this.
Scoffing?
Cried Lebedev, clasping his hands. Well, that's all right. I'm not angry. It's quite another matter. I'm afraid for people. Whom do you suspect?
A most difficult and complicated question. The servant I can't suspect. She was sitting in the kitchen. Nor my own children, either.
I should think not.
One of the visitors, then?
But is that possible?
Utterly and in the highest degree impossible.
But so it must be.
I'm prepared to admit, however, I'm convinced, indeed, that if it is a case of theft, it could not have been committed in the evening when we were all together, but in the night, or even in the morning, by someone who passed the night here.
Oh, my God.
Budovsky and Nikolay Ardalionovitch I naturally exclude, and they didn't even come into my room.
I should think so, even if they had come. Who spent the night there?
Counting me, there were four of us in two adjoining rooms. The General, Keller, Mr. Ferdyshenko, and I. So it must have been one of us four.
Of the three, then.
But which? I counted myself for correctness and accuracy. But you will admit, Prince, that I could hardly have robbed myself, though such cases do happen. Oh, Lebedev, how wearisome this is, cried Mushkin. Come to the point. Why do you drag it out? So that leaves three, and first Mr. Keller, an unsteady drunken fellow, and in certain respects liberal, that is, as regards the pocket, but in other respects rather with chivalrous than liberal tendencies. He slept here in the sick man's room, and only in the night came in here on the pretext of the bare floor being hard to sleep on.
You suspect him?
I did suspect him. When at 8 o'clock I jumped up like a madman and struck myself on the forehead with my hands, I at once waked the general, who was sleeping the sleep of innocence. Taking into consideration the strange disappearance of Ferdyshenko, which of itself had aroused our suspicions, we both resolved to search Keller, who was lying sleeping like a top. We searched him thoroughly. He hadn't a farthing in his pockets, and we couldn't find one pocket without a hole in it. He'd a blue check cotton handkerchief in a disgusting condition, then a love letter from a housemaid threatening him and asking for money, and some bits of the article you heard. The general decided that he was innocent. To complete our investigation, we waked the man himself by poking him violently. He could hardly understand what was the matter. He opened his mouth with a drunken air, and the expression on his face was absurd and innocent, foolish even. It was not he.
"Well, I am glad," Mushkin sighed joyfully. "I was so afraid for him."
"You were afraid? Then you had some grounds for it?"
Lebedev screwed up his eyes.
"Oh, no, I meant nothing," faltered Mushkin. "I was very stupid to say I was afraid for him. Do me the favour, Lebedev, not to repeat it to anyone."
"A prince, prince, your words are in my heart, at the bottom of my heart. It is a tomb,"
said Lebedev ecstatically, pressing his hat to his heart.
"Good, good. Then it must have been Ferdyshenko. That is, I mean, you suspect Ferdyshenko."
"Who else?"
Lebedev articulated softly, looking intently at Mushkin. "To be sure, who else is there? But I mean again, what evidence is there?"
"There is evidence. First his disappearance at 7 o'clock, or before 7 in the morning.
"I know. Kolya told me that he went into him, and said he was going to spend the day with... I forget with whom. Some friend of his."
"Vilkin. So Nikolay Ardalionovitch has told you already?"
"Well, he told me nothing about the theft."
"He doesn't know, for I've kept it secret for the time being." "And so he went to Vilkin's. It would seem there's nothing strange in a drunken man's going to see another drunken fellow like himself, even before daybreak, and without any reason. But here we have a clue. As he went, he left the address. Now, Prince... follow up the question. Why did he leave an address? Why did he purposely go out of his way to Nikolay Ardalionovitch to tell him, 'I'm going to spend the day at Vilkins's'? Who would care to know that he was going away into Vilkins? Why announce it? No. Here we have the cunning. The cunning of a thief.
"'It's as much as to say, "'I purposely don't cover up my traces, "'so how can I be a thief? "'Would a thief leave word where he was going? "'It's an excess of anxiety to avert suspicion "'and to efface, so to say, his footprints in the sand. "'Do you understand me, honoured prince?'
"'I understand, I quite understand. "'But you know that's not enough.
"'A second clue. "'The track turns out to be a false one, "'and the address given was not exact. "'An hour later, that is, at 8 o'clock, "'I was knocking at Vilkins's. "'He lives here in Fifth Street, and I know him too. "'There was no sign of Ferdyshenko, "'though I did get out of the servant who was stone-deaf "'that someone really had knocked 1 hour before, "'and been pretty vigorous too, so that he broke the bell.' But the servant wouldn't open the door, not wishing to wake Mr. Vilkin, and perhaps not anxious to get up herself. It does happen so.
And is that all your evidence?
It's not much. Prince, but who is there to suspect? Judge for yourself,
Lebedev concluded persuasively, and there was a gleam of something sly in his grin.
You ought to search your rooms once more, and look in every drawer, Mushkin pronounced anxiously, after some pondering.
"'I have searched them,'
Lebedev sighed, still more insinuating.
"'And what did you want to change that coat for?'
cried Mushkin, thumping the table in vexation.
"'That's a question from an old-fashioned comedy. "'But, most kind prince, you take my misfortune too much to heart. "'I don't deserve it. "'I mean, I alone don't deserve it. "'But you are worried about the criminal, "'about that good-for-nothing Mr. Ferdyshenko?'
"'Well, yes.
"'You certainly have worried me.'
Mushkin cut him short, absently and with dissatisfaction.
"'So what do you intend to do, if you're so convinced it is Ferdyshenko?'
"'Prince, honoured prince, who else could it be?'
said Lebedev, wriggling with growing persuasiveness.
"'You see the lack of any other on whom to fix, and, so to say, the complete impossibility of suspecting anybody but Mr. Ferdyshenko is, so to say, another piece of evidence, the third against Mr. Ferdyshenko, for I ask again—' "'Who else could it be? "'You wouldn't have me suspect Mr. Bodovsky, I suppose.
"'What nonsense.
"'Nor the General!'
"'What folly!'
Mushkin said, almost angrily, turning impatiently in his seat.
"'Folly and no mistake! "'And he amused me, too. "'I mean, the General did. "'I went with him just now while the track was fresh to Vilkins.' "'And you must note that the General was even more struck than I was "'when, first thing after finding out my loss, I waked him up. "'His face changed. "'He turned red and pale, "'and at last flew into violent and righteous indignation "'beyond anything I should have suspected of him. "'He's a most honourable man. "'He tells lies continually from weakness, "'but he's a man of the loftiest sentiments, "'a man, too, of no guile, "'who inspires the fullest confidence by his artlessness.' "'I've told you already, honoured prince, that I've more than a weakness. "'I've an affection for him. "'He suddenly stopped in the middle of the street, "'unbuttoned his coat, uncovered his chest. "'Search me!' he said. "'You searched, Keller. "'Why don't you search me? "'That's only justice,' said he. "'And his arms and legs were trembling. "'He was quite pale. "'He looked so threatening. "'I laughed and said, "'Listen, General, if anyone else had said such a thing about you, "'I'd have taken my head off with my own hands.' "'I'd have put it on a big dish "'and would have carried it myself "'to everyone who doubted you. "'Do you see this head?' I would say. "'I'll answer for him with this head, "'and not only so, but I go through fire for him. "'That's what I do,' said I. "'Then he threw his arms round me, "'there in the street, "'burst into tears, trembling, "'and squeezed me so tight that it made me cough. "'You're the only friend left me in my misfortunes,' said he. "'He's a man of feeling.' "'Then, of course, he told me an anecdote on the spot "'of how he had once been suspected of stealing 500,000 roubles in his youth, "'but the next day he had thrown himself into a house on fire "'and had dragged out of the flames the Count who had suspected him "'and Nina Alexandrovna, who was a girl at the time. "'The Count embraced him, and so his marriage followed with Nina Alexandrovna. "'And next day, in the ruins of the house, they found a box with the lost money in it. "'It was an iron box of English make, with a secret lock, "'and it had somehow got under the floor, so that no one noticed it, "'and it was only found after the fire. "'A complete lie. "'But when he spoke of Nina Alexandrovna, he positively blubbered. "'A most honourable lady, Nina Alexandrovna. "'Though she is angry with me.
"'You don't know her, do you?'
"'Scarcely at all. "'But I should be heartily glad to, if only to justify myself to her.' Nina Alexandrovna has a grievance against me, pretending that I led her spouse astray into drunkenness. But far from leading him astray, I restrain him. I perhaps entice him away from more pernicious society. Besides, he's my friend, and I confess it to you. I won't desert him now. In fact, it's like this. Where he goes, there I go. For you can only manage him through his sensibility. He's quite given up visiting his captain's widow now, though he secretly longs for her, and even sometimes moans for her, especially in the morning when he puts on his boots. I don't know why it's at that time. He's no money, that's the trouble, and there's no going to see her without. Hasn't he asked you for money on a prince? No, he hasn't. He's ashamed to. He did mean to. He owned to me, in fact, that he meant to trouble you, but he's bashful, seeing you obliged him not long ago, and besides, he thinks you wouldn't give it him. He told me this as his friend.
But you don't give him money.
Prince! Honoured prince! For that man I'd give not money alone, but, so to say, my life. But no, I don't want to exaggerate, not my life. But if it were a case of fever, an abscess, or even a cough, I'd be ready to bear it for him, I really would. For I look upon him as a great, though fallen man. Yes, indeed, not only for money.
Then you do give him money?
No, money I've not given him, and he knows himself that I won't give it him. But that's solely with a view to his elevation and reformation. And now he is insisting on coming to Petersburg with me. You see, I'm going to Petersburg to find Mr. Ferdoshenko while the tracks are fresh, for I know for a fact that he is there by now. My general is all eagerness, but I suspect that he'll give me the slip in Petersburg to visit his widow. I'm letting him go on purpose, I must own, as we've agreed to go in different directions as soon as we arrive, so as to catch Mr. Ferdoshenko more easily. So I shall let him go and then fall on him all of a sudden, like snow on the head at the widow's, just to put him to shame, as a family man, and as a man indeed speaking generally.
Only don't make a disturbance, Lebedieff, for goodness sake, don't make a disturbance,
Mushkin said in an undertone with great uneasiness.
Oh, no! Simply to put him to shame and see what sort of a face he makes, for one can judge a great deal from the face, honoured prince, especially with a man like that. Oh, prince, great as my own trouble is now, I cannot help thinking of him and the reformation of his morals. I have a great favour to ask of you, prince, and I must confess it was expressly for that I have come to you. You are familiar with their home. You have even lived with them. So if you would decide to assist me, honoured prince, entirely for the sake of the general and his happiness...
Lebedieff positively clasped his hands as though in supplication.
Assist you? Assist you how?
Believe me, I am extremely anxious to understand you, Lebedieff.
It was entirely with that conviction I have come to you. We could act through Nina Alexandrovna, constantly watching over and, so to speak, tracking His Excellency in the bosom of his family. I don't know them, unluckily. Moreover, Nikolai Ardilionovich adores you, so to speak, with every fibre of his youthful heart. He could help, perhaps.
No. To bring Nina Alexandrovna into this business, heaven forbid. Nor Kolya either. But perhaps I still fail to understand you, Lebedieff.
Why, there's nothing to understand!
Lebedieff sprang up from his chair.
Sympathy! Sympathy and tenderness, that's all the treatment our invalid requires. You, prince, will allow me to think of him as an invalid?
Yes, it shows your delicacy and intelligence.
For the sake of clearness, I will explain to you by an example taken from my practice. You see the kind of man he is. His only weakness now is for that widow, who won't let him come without money, and at whose house I mean to discover him today for his own good. But supposing it were not only the captain's widow, supposing he committed an actual crime, or anyway a most dishonourable action, though of course he's incapable of it, even then, I tell you, you could do anything with him simply by generous tenderness, so to speak, for he is the most sensitive of men. Believe me, he wouldn't hold out for 5 days. He would speak out of himself. He would weep and confess, especially if one went to work cleverly and in an honourable style by means of his family's vigilant watch and yours over his comings and goings. Oh, most noble-hearted prince!
Lebedieff leapt up in a sort of exultation.
Of course I'm not asserting that he... I'm ready to shed my last drop of blood, so to speak, for him at this moment, though his incontinence and drunkenness and the captain's widow and all that, taken together, may lead him on to anything.
In such a cause I am always ready to assist, said Mushkin, getting up. Only I confess, Lebedev, I am dreadfully uneasy. Tell me, do you still, in one word, you say yourself that you suspect Mr. Ferdyshenko?
Why? Who else? Who else, true-hearted prince?
Again Lebedev clasped his hands ingratiatingly with a sugary smile. Mushkin frowned and got up from his place.
Look here, Lukian Timofeitch. A mistake here would be a dreadful thing. This Ferdyshenko, I should not like to speak ill of him. This Ferdyshenko. Well, who knows? Perhaps it is he. I mean to say that perhaps he really is more capable of it than anyone else.
Lebedev opened his eyes and pricked up his ears.
You see, said Mushkin,
stumbling and frowning more and more as he walked up and down the veranda, trying not to look at Lebedev.
I was given to understand. I was told about Mr. Ferdyshenko that he was a man before whom one must be careful not to say anything.
Too much. You understand?
I say this to show that perhaps he really is more capable of it than anyone else, so as not to make a mistake. That's the great thing. Do you understand?
Who told you that about Mr. Ferdyshenko?
Lebedev caught him up instantly.
Oh, it was whispered to me. I don't believe it myself, though. I'm awfully vexed to be obliged to tell you. I assure you I don't believe it myself. It's some nonsense. Phew, how stupid I've been.
You see, Prince,
Lebedev was positively quivering all over,
this is important. This is extremely important now. I don't mean as to Mr. Ferdyshenko, but as to the way this information reached you.
Saying this, Lebedev ran backwards and forwards after Mushkin, trying to keep step with him.
I've something to tell you now, Prince. Just now, when I was going with the General to Vilkin's, after he told me about the fire, he was boiling over, of course, with anger, and suddenly began dropping the same hint to me about Mr. Ferdyshenko, but so strangely and incoherently that I couldn't help asking him some questions, and in the end I was fully convinced that all the whole thing was solely an inspiration of His Excellency's, solely arising, so to speak, from his generous heart. For he lies entirely because he can't restrain his sentimentality. Now, kindly consider this. If he told a lie, and I'm sure he did, how could you have heard of it? It was the inspiration of the moment, you understand, Prince. So who could have told you? That's important, that. That's very important. And, so to say,
Kolya told me it just now.
And he was told it this morning by his father, whom he met at 6 o'clock, between 6 and 7, in the passage, when he came out for something. And Mushkin told the story in detail.
Ah, well, that's what's called a clue,
Lebedev laughed noiselessly, rubbing his hands.
Just as I thought. That means that His Excellency waked from his sleep of innocence at 6 o'clock, expressly to go and wake his darling son and warn him of the great danger of associating with Mr. Ferdyshenko. What a dangerous man Mr. Ferdyshenko must be, and what parental solicitude on the part of His Excellency.
Listen, Lebedev.
Mushkin was utterly confused.
Listen, keep quiet about it. Don't make an uproar. I beg you, Lebedev, I entreat you. In that case, I swear I'll help you, but on condition that nobody knows.
Rest assured, most noble-hearted, most sincere and generous prince,
cried Lebedev in perfect exultation.
Rest assured that all this will be buried in my loyal heart. I'd give every drop of my blood, illustrious prince. I'm a poor creature in soul and spirit, but ask any poor creature, any scoundrel even, which he'd rather have to do with, a scoundrel like himself or a noble-hearted man like you, most true-hearted prince, he'll answer that he prefers the noble-hearted man, and that's the triumph of virtue. Goodbye, honoured prince, treading softly, and hand in hand.